Hi, today is February 13th, 2022, Super Bowl Sunday. I'm Todd Ogasa-Ward, my good friend John Westfall, and we are not going to give you a game recap. We haven't started yet.
Yeah. Even if you're listening to this afterward, through the miracles of technology, we do not know what's going to happen with the game.
Right.
But we also agree that the refs' calls are horrible. And that we couldn't believe that play either.
That's right.
And
oh my gosh, the halftime show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, what could we say that hasn't already been said?
Everything, or will be said.
Apparently. Yeah, or will be said.
So there you go. That's our Super Bowl wrap-up before the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And congratulations to the winner.
What? Yeah, one team is very happy, one city is not.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so speaking of happy and not happy, I ran across an interesting ZDNet article that that poses the question, is your iPhone case damaging the battery? I never really thought about that before reading the article, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, thinking about my friends that are not as tech savvy, it seems like there's sort of this inverse connection between, or inverse relationship between your tech savviness and the level of protection you need on your case or on your phone. And by that, I mean, I have no children. I tend to not
cats.
Be a very chaotic. I have cats, but I have a very non-chaotic life. So I don't need like a LifeProof or an OtterBox case on my phones usually. But I could see totally if I was running around here, there, everywhere, shuttling kids around in a job where I'm, you know, not exactly doing desk work, but I'm, you know, out in the field somewhere. I could see getting a case like that. And it sounds like those are the ones that might keep the phone hotter during charging. So I think it's very ironic where it's like if you have a job that allows you to be tech savvy in your daily life, you probably don't need a very thick case on your phone. But if you have a job where you just need your phone to work and maybe last the whole day, you might also be the type of person who unfortunately puts it in a case that allows it to overheat a little bit.
Yeah, and that's the whole point of this ZDNet article is that different cases basically insulate your phone in different ways, you know. So I think they said the silicone cases are the least, if I recall correctly from the article, I'm kind of scrolling through it now, are the least heat retaining. And I think the rubberized case, and I'm looking at mine, and I think I have a rubberized case. I have one called, I like this, Casekoo, C-A-S-E-K-O-O. I think it's the first time I bought it, but it's a nice case. It seems fairly protective. The inductive charging still works through the case, which is not the case with all cases, especially the OtterBoxes. You put an OtterBox on, it will not, inductive charging won't work at all. And I know because I had a real nice OtterBox or OtterBox-like case for a previous Android phone. And it was very protective, but it also did not allow you to just put it on a, you know, like a key charger or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I've I have a very weird relationship with cases right now. I mean, I always do because I do switch here and there. The two I do have for the iPhone 13 Pro are the 12 South Book.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been using that one as much lately, but I do keep that one as a more dressier case, especially if I need a wallet attached to my case, because normally I only need one or two credit cards. But if I'm traveling or I figure I'm going somewhere where I'm going to need cash and I'm going to need all that, I want a case that keeps it all in one. But lately I've been using the Apple leather case that you can buy. That's just the OEM leather case.
Yeah.
But now I have gotten to the peak, I think what is called peak weird anal retentiveness about this, because I have the Apple leather case in midnight black. I have the Apple wallet in midnight black. I have the key fob for my AirTag on my keys in leather midnight black. And I have a watch band in midnight black. So I match for things that nobody else sees other than me. Yeah, it's one of those things that just keeps my mind a little bit more, you know, rested in a sense, I suppose.
You know, I should point out one more thing from the article, although it focuses on cases. I mean, literally, that's the title. The other thing it notes is the kind of charger you use. It says that if you use a lower power 5-watt charger, which is what I think. I'm not sure what phones come with now. I think they come with 12-watt chargers now, right? The newer phones.
They might, yeah.
But it says if you use a lower 5-watt charger, then, you know, your heat generated by your by your phone is less than if you use a higher wattage charger, like if you use a, you know, like if you use a PD power port or something, I would assume. And it's funny, you know, because I remember asking Sven, his, you know, our resident EE, a while back, what he thought about using Qi chargers in particular, because I noticed that when I use that my phone does heat up, where it's, you know, noticeably warm when it's charging on that. And so as a result, and he said it's okay. He said he thought it was okay. But, you know, I just don't like heat. And I already live in a warm weather environment, so I just use a regular charger. So the inductive charging doesn't basically, you know, set up. Oh, I see your other cat. Set up, a heat cycle on my phone. But interesting article. We'll have in the show notes. Is your iPhone case damaging the battery? And like I said, it does also talk about what kind of chargers to use. Okay, next item, probably something I'll never use, but I used to be a programming language junkie in my younger days. I'd try out everything. And I was fortunate that one of the companies I worked for way back when used to send me to classes for various things like Smalltalk and so forth. So I had a lot of opportunity to, you know, just really focus in on some of this stuff. But at any rate, we've discussed Google's Flutter open source framework in the past. You know, it works on various kinds of mobile devices, Chrome, and so forth. And now it can compile to ARM or Intel on Windows, which is kind of cool, I think. So if you want to build a Windows app in Flutter, if you already have Flutter code, you can port it to Windows directly now with a native compile. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Have you ever tried it? I've never tried it.
I have not, but it does look interesting. And I've thought about playing around with that. I've not done a lot of programming in the last year or two, but yeah. I do have, some plans to perhaps play around with things like this. Just because, you know, cross-platform has always been the elusive thing. I know. Can you find something that's cross-platform that's as fast as native? So I'm always up for trying it and seeing how well it works. But I'm always, unfortunately, for the most part, disappointed.
Yeah, you know, I actually flew to San Francisco to attend Java 1. It was always called Java 1, but the first Java 1 in 1995. I remember being really excited by Java, and then I started using it. I go, oh my gosh, there are so many drawbacks to using this cross-platform. But I know people love it. It's still a very popular language, and it's just me, but hey. I should note that if you don't want to have to like install anything to try Dart, there is something called DartPad at dartpad.dev, and it's like a, you know, a GUI programming test environment that you can try out the Dart language, and it has a little output window on the right and a code window on the left. So DartPad, there you go. And it looks like, do you have to be, I mean, I didn't log in or anything, so maybe it's using my Google, I don't know if it's using my Google thing or just lets you do anonymous stuff. Don't really know. Don't really care, but it's interesting. It's there. Didn't give me any trouble getting in, if you want to test that out. And you know, speaking of Google, so, you know, a couple of months ago, I was kind of grumpy. I think it was last fall, like August, September, when Microsoft announced it would no longer support the native Android apps on Chromebooks, which can run Android apps. And I was using a couple of those, you know, so I was kind of upset. But I stopped using Microsoft Office much on my Chromebook for whatever reason. But when I do use it, I was going through office.com, you know, log in and just do stuff on the web. I completely forgot that Microsoft has a progressive web app, a PWA environment for Office. And so until I ran across this CNET article just this morning, this is how to use Office on a Chromebook. And I said, don't you just go into browser? And yeah, you can. And that's how you start. But basically, a PWA installs a little stub on your Chromebook so that you can launch it, you know, like a native app, and saves you a little bit of trouble. It saves you a little bit of typing, I guess. And you can also, as the article points out, you can do things like pin it to a taskbar, get notifications, work offline, and more easily resize it. But otherwise, it's the same as a web version. But, you know, so I got to go try that. I see if I like that workflow. Because otherwise, you know, it's the same thing. It's still like same going through the browser, but it does maybe modify the workflow so it's a little bit easier to access things. I'm going to give it a whirl, and I guess you could do it on a Mac and whatever if you don't want to install the full, you know, heavyweight app. And I've got a little a little link. In addition to the CNET article about using Office on a Chromebook, I have a little link to Google's support page that talks about using progressive web apps in general, not just Microsoft's mm-hmm. Office app. Okay, so what do you got, John, on your list?
Well, so, you know, it is Valentine's Day tomorrow. Mm. And for those of you that were too involved with the Super Bowl and forgot about it, and your wives were not happy or your husbands were not happy, I apologize that you're living with that. But yes, you know, Todd and I are older guys that didn't get to use any of the Web 2.0 ways to find our significant others.
No.
I did use Yahoo Personals back in the 90s. That's how my wife and I met. So,
well, that's interesting.
Using technology before it was cool to say that you met online. You know,
right.
When we met each other, we didn't really tell anyone that we'd met online for a number of years because it was still very stigmatized. Like, what kind of
people
did you have to go online for? Yeah, that was something I think people forgot that. Today, meeting someone for a romantic relationship on the internet seems normal, but back then it was, well, why didn't you just go to a bar? Or why didn't you meet someone through work or church or something? You know, that was a different time.
I was going to say online matchmaking is also a huge business now, too.
Yes, yes. So since we can't really comment on sort of aspect of relating with our spouses, what sort of technology do we use with our spouses? And it got me thinking about how collaboration is typically something we think about in a work context or maybe a hobbyist context.
Yeah.
We don't really think about it in a romantic relationship context. And yet there are, you know, tools that we use. So, for example, my wife and I have used AnyList, which is an iOS app. They also have a web list. Yeah, for shared grocery listing and recipes and meal planning. I used it this morning. She added things to the list, and I went and picked up some things at the store this morning. That has been useful to us. Apple Notes for collaboration, you know, Christmas gift planning, checking off when things come in. Obviously, a shared password management solution. So we've used 1Password for a number of years for that. We've used LastPass in the past. And then using larger platforms that have built-in sharing with your family. So Apple shared photo albums, Apple shared calendar and reminder list. And then when we have something that doesn't allow a share, we typically have one account. So a Walmart account that we use for everything, a Kroger account, and then fast food chains and that sort of thing. We have one account for mobile ordering. But oddly enough, for Amazon, we have our own accounts. And I think that's just there's no real reason for that. I guess we have our own eBay accounts, too. But she doesn't use eBay as much as we did at one time. So what technology have you used or that you would throw in support for?
Well, you know, actually, it's one that you've already mentioned in your list, and I'm just going to add to it. Hey, my mouse is acting funny. I'm going to use my touchpad. And that's Apple's iOS Reminder, which we don't actually use in shared mode, but I'll tell you how we do it. It's kind of old school, but it works for me. So I can't remember, and this is not an ageist thing. I couldn't remember things when I was young either. I just have a poor memory for just a lot of stuff, you know. But so if my wife tells me, for example, hey, you know, if you're going to such and such a place, could you also pick up thing A? And I'll go, yep. And I'll go there and I'll come back. Did you pick up thing A? What thing A? Uh-huh. So what I always tell her is please email it. Not please text me what you want. I'll put it in reminder. And not only did I put it in reminder along with whatever else I went to, you know, say supermarket to pick up, I'll put in a geofence tag, you know, because Apple's reminder lets you say when you arrive, when you depart, you know, set this off, right? And so because I will forget that I put it in reminder too. So I really need an alert from reminder when I get to someplace that, hey, these are the five things you need to pick up. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. The geotagging is interesting. The other thing I find interesting with Apple reminders is Siri suggestions.
Oh.
So a couple of weeks ago, for example, the power went out. Actually, this was last week. Power went out at my house or my apartment right as my wife was leaving to go back to work at lunch. Mm-hmm. And she was going to set the washer to start at, before we'd get home from work. And obviously that wasn't going to happen. And so she texted me and said, hey, if you get home early, start the dishwasher, start the washer. Mm-hmm. And I look now in my Siri suggestions, and there is a start the dishwasher suggestion found in messages with my wife. So that's another one of those little features that I don't think most of us have capitalized on yet, but it's an interesting idea that Apple's intelligence can find those things and say, hey, maybe you should do this, or here's another possible thing you could
but
do.
Where is it reminding you of, or suggesting that reminder to you? Is it in Reminders itself or somewhere else?
It is on my MacBook, and I'm looking to see if it's actually in the iOS app, but it is not. It's only on my MacBook.
Oh, interesting.
So with Apple doing its on-device AI, it probably, because she sent me that message from my MacBook, or I got it on my MacBook and read it, that's when it decided to add it on.
Because, I think it might have been, what was it? It might have been like some early version of Google Assistant or Google Maps or something that used to suggest to me. You know, I used to go to, I don't do it anymore, but not that long ago, I used to go to Costco every Wednesday after work for some reason. Mm-hmm. It was just like a good day of the week to go. And, I know what it was. It was Google Maps. And Google Maps would suggest to me, kind of at the end of the day, hey, this is how long it would take you to get to Costco right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Apple will do that too occasionally, where it's like, you, I bet you're going here. Sometimes it's right and sometimes it is way off. Yeah. But it's interesting when it's way off to see why it's way off. And there are ways to dig into the customizations in the On app and see what it thinks your plans are. And I'm going to see if I can find it real quick in iOS. Because if you've never gone to it, it is a very interesting way that it does some of that on-device learning.
Okay.
But it's not exactly easy to find because obviously it probably freaks out more than a few people that it's trying to do these things. But let me see if it's might be under location.
And while you're noting that, I was going to say sharing photos. That's the big one, I think. You use Apple's photos. I happen to use Google Photos, although I do store to Apple too, of course, because I back up to both. Actually, I also back up to OneDrive, but OneDrive Photos is kind of useless in terms of really surfacing items in a surprising or interesting way. And I don't think we have any shared vendor apps. I'm looking at your list. Yeah, I don't think so. I will say that, in addition to my wife, actually my daughter and I have done a lot more collaborative kind of stuff out of necessity. So as I said, I have a poor memory, and this is, again, not an age thing. It's always been like this. And so I used to tell my daughter when she was young, like in grade school, I would say, if you need dad to do something, I'm not going to remember. So please put everything in Google Calendar and invite me to it. And she was like, 9 years old, right? And she says, okay. Yeah. And till this day, if she needs me to do anything for her or with her, it goes in Google Calendar and I get an invitation. So that's worked out really well.
It is really funny to use something that you're used to in a business context and having your family just know, I guess, that they have to do the same thing. For a long time, my wife, I think, was a little bit annoyed when I'd say, are you, can you put that, can you send me a request or
right,
add it
right.
to this or that? Okay, so here is where you find out Apple's significant locations.
Okay.
So you go to privacy settings
and
then privacy.
Okay. Oops. My and then froze. Yep. Okay,
well,
privacy.
I'll wait till you're there.
I'm there.
Then
location
services.
Uh-huh.
And then you scroll down to the very bottom, system services.
Oh, wait, I'm still getting there. Okay, I see it. Go there.
And then you go all the way down to significant locations.
I see it, and it's on.
And if you tap on significant locations,
I'm doing that.
It will then let you go to a summary
How interesting.
Of where it's, how you know, what it thinks your recent records are, where home is, sort of those things, and how many records it's keeping on you. For me, it's keeping 217 records right now, and I could clear the history, but then of course it will not tell me where, you know, when to leave for certain things. And
so mine says it's from December 21, 2021 till today, so just a couple of months. Mm-hmm. It has 79 records, but where do I see the records exactly?
Digging, it looks like it won't give you, in this particular case, that thing. There are other random places to look around to get into some of this, but
yeah, I'm zooming out from there's a map under the words recent record, and it says the word home, which is, I guess, where I am right now. And I'm looking to see if I zoom out, if it shows me like where I've been or something, but it doesn't show me that. But interesting. So you can clear it but not see it. So it's a use only, not even read only. Interesting. I should also
go ahead.
I was going to say, when you tap into significant locations, if it's already on, it does do a face ID for me, so it won't let you see it without authentication, which is interesting.
It's also interesting to me, if you, I don't know if anyone has realized this, but when you go into Find My on iOS and you go to the Me tab and look at your location, you can edit the location name. So for me, when I'm at home, it says home, and you can do that with any location you're at. So if you want your friends, when they're looking at your location, to know, oh, you're at work, or oh, I'm here or I'm there, versus just the street address. They'll still get the street address, but it's a little bit easier to let people know what you're doing or why you're doing it, versus just telling people, oh, I'm at this random location that you don't know what this is.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. I did not know that. I wish you could see the, you know, locations it thinks is important to me. I always find that interesting. You know what? Like, and although some people find it intrusive, I guess. I find, you know, I let Google Maps track me, for example. I don't know if that's a good thing to admit or not, but I do. And I just find it interesting to see where I've been. Recently, it's nowhere because of the pandemic. But in years past, you know, as it tracked me across states and across countries even, it was kind of fun to see that.
Yeah, I have an app on my phone that's called Life Cycle that'll download where I've been and classify it for me and all those things. It's an older app that I had bought. I downloaded before it went to a freemium model, so I still have all the features with it. But does, if I really want to, it'll export a CSV file of everywhere I've been and how long I was there and all those sorts of things. So it's kind of interesting, and it will give you, you know, breakdowns for like a whole month at a time for where you've been and what categories of places you've been. It is funny and interesting to me because I've been using it since 2017-ish, around there. Sometimes I didn't always have it installed, but I think I have complete data for 2018, 19, 20, and 21. So with the pandemic, you can see a very clear change in my habits. 2020 versus 2021 versus even 2019. So
that is interesting.
Interesting ability to look at.
Yeah, I should note. So it's Life Cycle with a space between the two words, and it has a 4.7 out of 5 stars rating, with almost 40,000. Almost 37,000 ratings. So it looks like it's pretty well liked. There are a few people that are a little bit unhappy in the comments, but overall, most people like it, it seems. Looking at the cost, so in-app purchases, I'm not sure what the difference is. There's one premium features online backup for $9 and one premium features online backup for $5. You would think the $5 one would be $10 and $5. You would think it'd be a no-brainer, but I guess that's for like a year versus 6 months or something like that. It's not clear.
Or it's an older tier. That's where you see it sometimes, where someone, you know, had priced their app at one level and then they made that unavailable, but it still shows up as an in-app purchase tier. So you might not be able to get to it. You might have to do the newer one, but there technically is an in-app purchase for a less, you know, expensive version.
Yeah. Interesting. I might go look at this. I was just thinking about other things aside from the photo apps, calendar. Oh, yeah, calendar is a biggie, definitely. As I said, my daughter and I especially have been doing that since she was like a little child. And that was many years ago. Amazon's an interesting one. You know, I've been trying to figure this one out. So my wife and I do have this. We do. Does she use my Amazon account? She only uses it for Amazon Prime videos, I think. Mm-hmm. And for years, I thought, you know, her videos were in my, you know, still watching list, like, you know, continue with watching this thing list. But apparently they're not. I'm very confused by this because I would like not watch certain things because I thought it would mess up her, you know, cycle on multiple season TV series. But apparently they're separate and I need to go back and look at that. So there are some funky things about sharing. And there are some apps that just don't share well. Like most video apps now do have profiles. And so you can have one account and share them pretty effectively. But there are others like Viki.com, which is mostly Asian television shows, but also other countries, non-US countries. And that does not have any concept of sharing. You pay for it and it's yours, you know. And if you share it, well, good luck with your, you know, not messing up your list of shows that you've been watching. Do you think there's anything? I'm kind of looking at your list of stuff. I really haven't used these effectively. Like notes, I really, you know, ever since the sharing became a thing, which was a while back, have not used it much. And my Apple Watch just unlocked for some reason. I don't know where my watch. I think for maybe because I'm older than you, it's mostly old school. You know, it's still SMS text messaging, photos, manual reminders that were texted to me or SMS to me. That's about it, I think. Gee, I feel old now. I really feel old now.
Well, John, you know, there are many possible things you could start doing. So just have to kind of keep that in mind. But
indeed. Yeah, and I should note that, you know, this works not just with significant others, but also for kids and close friends and you know, whoever else that you have a lot of contact with. What we need are pet apps, you know, so our pets can remind us about stuff.
Well, you know, they'll figure out ways. They find their own ways to remind us.
Well, you know, we could use what you call like a Skinner box kind of thing, and have them, you know, tap out things to us that sends a reminder, like, hey, you know, out of my favorite treats, go buy some more.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's about all I've got, John. It's you know,
yeah,
it's kind of low news.
Low news, but definitely maybe some food for thought on what you could use technology for. And everyone will hopefully have a good time watching or ignoring that big game that's happening later
today.
That's
right.
Depending on your predisposition.
And if nothing else, the Super Bowl commercial is always fun.
True.
So there's that.
Although I was talking about that with my wife, and I said, you know, the whole reason I think Super Bowl commercials ever got interesting was that they were the first short-form humorous content that we saw on a regular basis. Because if you think about before YouTube and TikTok, if you wanted something that was humorous and short-form, you know, you're at a sitcom, like a half-hour sitcom.
Yeah, that's too long.
So the idea of watching something for a minute and getting a laugh out of it, really, you had to hope that it was an entertaining commercial. And not many commercials in the 80s and 90s were all that entertaining when you think about it. Today, the idea that you create a commercial that's also potentially going to go viral or potentially of humorous interest to people, that's a relatively new concept. I think about all those commercials from the 2000, you know, before the 2000s, where it was just, here's boring product, enjoy boring product, buy boring product. Today we don't get that. We've been spoiled with, you know, humorous Geico ads and other companies that have made a lot of knowledge about their product through humor. So that's why, you know, I think Super Bowl ads may not be as popular as they once were, because we're used to that content nowadays.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I never thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right. It's funny you mentioned that because I remember in the mid-90s, like 94, 95, there was a website that collected Super Bowl ads and some other humorous ads where you could go watch them, you know, just one after another without, you know, actually watching the game. And I guess the owners of the ads were so incensed that they forced the website to be taken down. Was this before or after DMCA? I can't remember, but probably before. But anyway, they somehow managed to get the site taken down. And those of us who are fans of the site said, you know, that's really stupid of these advertisers mm-hmm. and or brands, because what better way than for us to remember your brand than watching the, you know, your same stupid commercial over and over again, because it was actually funny. So this was literally free advertising. And they said, nah, that's not a good deal. Free advertising is not a good deal.
Yeah, who needs free advertising? That's stupid. You know, yeah. We want to pay for our advertising like that's Americans.
Right. That's right, Americans. So, anyway. All right, we have filled up another half an hour of your time and ours. So thank you much, folks. And we will talk to you next time. If my mouse will work and let me stop the recording. There we go.